This series on COVID and the church was originally a three-part lesson, something like that, in Sunday school, and there was discussion with it, but the audio did not come off. I had technical difficulties, so I'm going back and just recording the things presented there without, of course, the discussion involved. Why am I doing a series on COVID 3 years later? COVID, as we have come to call it, started in 2020, and I don't know exactly when you would say it ended. I think for some people, they have trouble letting go of it and don't want it to ever end. There are certain mandates in various places still to this day. So for some people, I guess it's still not over, but for most of us, it is and ended probably somewhere in 2022. But the reason that I want to do this now is because that was not an insignificant thing or an event or time period. That was huge. And there were things that happened during that time that are astonishing. And I think we would do well to reflect on it and learn from it, and I hope be able to apply the lessons that can be learned from that for future reference, because I have an idea that we're not entirely done with such crises, likely manufactured crises. So let's dig in here. What I want to focus on first here, and this will probably involve a couple of different messages, at least. But I want to focus on deception. And 1 Kings 22:19 through 23 is one of the texts that I want to consider, and 2 Thessalonians 2:11 through 12. In 1 Kings 22:19 through 23, we have that passage where the prophet Micaiah in northern Israel is called in because Ahab wants to go to battle and he wants to go out and fight his war. He wants to believe that he's going to succeed. And so he's got all these prophets of Baal who are prophesying, and they're telling him exactly what he wants to hear. And Jehoshaphat notes that none of them are prophets of the Lord, and so he says, is there not here a prophet of the Lord that we could inquire of? And Ahab says, yeah, there's this guy, Micaiah, but I hate him because he never prophesies good concerning me. And Jehoshaphat says, you know, say it isn't so, and let's call him in. And so they do, and at first Micaiah, you know, sarcastically pretends that he's just going to be in unity with all the false prophets of Baal and say, yes, go ahead, go up and fight and you'll prevail. Don't worry. Well, Ahab recognizes that it's sarcasm, and so he adjures him to tell him the truth, which is interesting. He seems to recognize that for Micaiah to say that Ahab is going to succeed must mean it's tongue-in-cheek or false, that Micaiah doesn't mean it, and that the truth would actually be the opposite of that. And so Micaiah says, therefore hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing by him on his right and on his left. The Lord said, who will entice Ahab to go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? And one said this while another said that. Then a spirit came forward, presumably an evil spirit, and stood before the Lord and said, I will entice him. The Lord said to him, how? And he said, I will go out and be a deceiving spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. Then he said, you are to entice him and also prevail. Go and do so. Now therefore, behold, the Lord has put a deceiving spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets, and the Lord has proclaimed disaster against you. And of course, Ahab did not like that message, and he told Joseph, you see what I mean? He never prophesied good concerning me. And then he essentially had Micaiah arrested and thrown in jail. But what we see there is that there is a deception that's going on, and there is God sending an evil spirit as a judgment upon a man. And he uses the devil, the devil's hosts, to deceive human beings that God intends to judge. And so he sends them an evil spirit. That spirit lies through the mouths of human beings. Other people then believe it, and then they fall. And that's what happened to Ahab. The same thing happens in 2 Thessalonians 2. And I don't want to get into the varying, differing views of prophecy and eschatology here concerning this passage. I am familiar with the varying views, and I don't want to get into the details of that, and my take on all that. I'm not quoting 2 Thessalonians 2 because I am saying that definitively that is a prophecy concerning what just happened in 2020 to 2022. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that this is another instance in which God chooses to judge men by sending a deceiving spirit, a deluding influence, as it's called here, so that men will believe what is false. And I do think that happened in 2020 to 2022. So whether it's a fulfillment of it or not, whether that prophecy is specifically describing events that just occurred in our day, I leave for others to judge and argue about if you wish. My point is that God does this. God judges men, and he judges men by sending them deluding influences so that they believe lies. So that text says, for this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth, but took pleasure in wickedness. So a deluding influence so that they believe what is false. My take on what we now affectionately call COVID is that we have just experienced one of the most profound deceptions and deluding influences that the world has ever seen. I realize that's a huge statement, and I realize it sounds myopic for someone who lives in a narrow sliver of time and space, the 20th to 21st century, who's going to die soon and pass out of this world. And to make some kind of a sweeping statement like that, covering world history, can raise eyebrows. I understand that. But my point is not that it's the delusion was, in a sense, more powerful than other delusions that have occurred throughout history, but that the sheer reach of it worldwide, this was all over the world. This covered seemingly every square inch of the planet. Everybody who had a smartphone, everybody who had any access to media, and that covers most of the world these days, knew about COVID, and they knew they were supposed to be scared to death, and they locked down, and they masked up, and they got the needle in the arm. Millions upon millions upon millions of people did. And so the sheer reach of the propaganda is just astonishing. Joseph Goebbels would have salivated to have the kind of power that the media has today. The tech companies, governments, businesses, tech companies working in concert with one another, getting a message out and getting it out, drumbeats repeated over and over and over again to get people to believe something. The world has never seen anything like this. I suppose you would have to go back all the way, in a sense, to the Tower of Babel to find a time frame in which all people were sort of getting their antenna were up, and they're all getting the same signal. We live in a world where we are plugged in to the internet at all times, and I'm one of them. I do not have a smartphone, and I don't have one on purpose, but I'm on the internet a lot, so just a confession there. I'm not suggesting this is true of everybody else but me. It's true of me, too. We're never away from it. And when we do searches online, and when we start scrolling through stuff, there are, you know, Google and other search engines determine what web pages come up when you do a search. They can advance certain sites and, you know, promote them and give them greater publicity, or they can bury websites according to their preference and priorities and worldview. Twitter and Facebook can determine and do whether something goes viral or not. It's not just about, oh, you really tapped into the, you know, the winds there on that one. You really saw that and captured that moment. And yeah, it's not about you and what you captured. It's about whether those who determine such things, what will go viral and what's not, whether they wanted it to go viral or not. They all wanted us to focus at that time period on COVID and to be very afraid. And they succeeded. If they want to change the subject overnight and suddenly talk everything about Russia, Ukraine, they can do that. And suddenly everybody's talking about that. If they want you to suddenly focus on monkeypox, they can make you focus on monkeypox, because it'll be everywhere in the news. Whatever they decide is going to be the front page center news, that's what they'll focus on, and that's what you'll be focusing on so long as you are plugged in to the matrix. What deceptions am I referring to? Well, let's just consider medicine. There were long established principles of medical wisdom that we had accrued over the centuries and were bedrock principles of medicine, and they were flushed down the toilet overnight with no explanation as to why such things were no longer true. And what's more, if you raised questions about it or objected, you were ridiculed and insulted as anti-science, anti-vaxxer, a COVID denier, an extremist, or something else. And if you've read 1984, or you've seen the movie, this would ring a bell. In 1984, the Ministry of Truth, which is a euphemism for the Ministry of Lies, is the propaganda arm of the government, would change things overnight and then bury history down the memory hole, a vacuum tube that you have people assigned to go and excise out various things from the past that the Big Brother didn't want you to know anymore, and they would be, you know, flushed down the memory hole and burn up down the other end of the vacuum tube. They would overnight say, okay, we are at war now. Eurasia is now at war with Oceania. Whereas prior to that, for however long a period of time, they were allies, with each other. But overnight, they would say, no, Eurasia is at war with Oceania, not allies. And you better not question it. No one had better say, wait a minute, you just yesterday, we were friends, and you're saying we're now enemies? Yes, and what's more, we've always been enemies. So they just rewrite the truth and rewrite the history overnight, and you better not question it. And that's what happened, essentially, in many ways, in COVID. There were many studies done prior to COVID about masks and whether they protect us from viruses. The uniform conclusion was no. They don't. The reason people wore masks in operating rooms, and that was pretty much where it was worn, is to keep nasal drips from falling into open cavities, a saliva, should a doctor, surgeon, or nurse sneeze, or something ruptures as someone's being operated on and blood spurts up and fluids that keeps out of the eyes and mouth of the people working on. They're not to stop viruses. The holes in the mask are significantly larger than viruses are, and significantly larger than coronaviruses. and that the COVID-19 virus. And this was known. There's plenty of quotes available from Fauci and others indicating that masks don't really do much there. Until, of course, they do. Until, of course, we decided that that is no longer acceptable truth. There's a new truth that you must accept, and it's always been that way. And you better not question it, or you're a science, anti-science, COVID denier. Another thing they flushed down the toilet overnight was the idea that you can chase a virus that's already circulating in the population around the world, by the way, with a vaccine. In truth, you can't, because the virus mutates much faster than a vaccine can catch up. By the time the vaccine arrives, the original variant targeted by the vaccine is already non-existent. And that's exactly what happened in COVID. By the time that they got their vaccine out on the market, rolling out in 2021, the virus had already mutated significantly, making the vaccine worthless. And this was also known. They knew that you can't chase viruses with a vaccine. That's why we generally don't have vaccines for viruses. That's why we don't have one for HIV, partly. You can't chase a virus with a vaccine. We had always understood that it takes 10 to 12 years to properly do all the background work and legwork to get a good and safe vaccine where you've tested it on all the right people, you've tested it on pregnant women that voluntarily sign up for it, you've tested it on other people, you've tested it on various age populations and demographics, and you've done long-term safety studies, that those things all need to be done to consider that something is safe before you inject it into people's arms. And that's why it takes 10 to 12 years generally to get one out. And obviously, you're never going to catch a virus that came out 10 years ago or 12 years ago with such a vaccine. That's why we don't have them. Well, overnight, we're told you don't need to do that anymore. Such things are unnecessary. Wave the magic wand, presto, we can come up with Operation Warp Speed, and we can come up with a safe and effective vaccine with a couple of months of clinical trials, and then we'll roll that thing out here, and it'll be here in less than a year. Another truth that was thrown out the window is the idea that early treatment is necessary. Suddenly, people were just sent home. When they came in and tested positive for COVID, go back home until you're worse, until you're blue in the face, if you have trouble breathing, and then come back. That just goes in the face of a long-standing elementary principle of medicine, which is early treatment is best. Get on this early. Don't wait till it gets worse. But that's what we did. Informed consent is not needed for a new medication, especially for experimental drug that has no long-term safety trials. No need for informed consent. Pull out the safety data page on the vaccines, it's blank. It's like nothing there. People were just told it's safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. Repeated drumbeat propaganda, and people were not told about the risks when they took the shot. We were told that vaccines provide better immunity than natural immunity, which also goes in the face of a long-standing principle of medicine. No, it doesn't. Natural immunity is much broader than the narrow target that a vaccine has. But we were told it doesn't matter if you've already had COVID, you still need the shot. They came up with a brand new category called asymptomatic spreaders, which is a myth. There's no such thing as an asymptomatic spreader. This was a brand new thing. But they needed us to believe that so that we would all, healthy people included, stay home and stay locked down. You can't have the healthy people going around. And if you don't want that, you have to create this new category called asymptomatic spreader. And by the way, what happened ever happened to HIPAA? I thought that when HIPAA came, it was very difficult to get any information on somebody, that you really couldn't pry into people's medical history and their you know, their data. But suddenly, it seems like HIPAA can just disappear with the wave of the magic wand overnight. Suddenly, it's everybody's business, whether you've been vaccinated or not. Every business, every care home, that wants to know if you've been vaccinated, then they will know whether they can discriminate against you or not. So there are multiple localities throughout the U.S. during this time when people were not allowed. They had vaccine passports, and they were not allowed into sporting events. They were not allowed into restaurants. They were not allowed into various businesses if they were not vaccinated. And since when is that anybody's business? I mean, you see what we now accept as normal that would have been outrageous just a couple of years ago? Something profound has happened to get us to think that's okay. That's normal. It's a normal world that I should have to go around demonstrating proof that I've gotten this worthless COVID shot, experimental shot, that doesn't stop infection or transmission or prevent you from dying. It doesn't do anything good for you. But I've got to prove that I have it in order to go here and there and everywhere. It's just been very recent that they're finally, in the United States, relaxing the requirement for foreigners to be able to come through to our country and enter our country without being vaccinated. And, of course, you can come across the border in droves and enter illegally without being vaccinated, but not if you're going to come the lawful way. A further lie is that we were told 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Remember that? Yeah, that wasn't exactly 2 weeks, was it? Staying 6 feet apart stops airborne viruses from spreading? No, it doesn't. Where in the world would we get that idea? In the early days of the of COVID, this would be March 2020, you know, I'm as shocked as everybody else. No one saw this coming. I mean, I expected that we as Christians and the churches would be persecuted by the Rainbow Coalition, you know. That's been the point of the spear for a long time, that what we really need to be on the alert for was gay couples showing up at our churches asking to be married, so that when we said no, they could sue us and prosecute us, perhaps. That's what I was expecting. I think that's what lots of Christians were expecting. And there has been some of that, of course. But no one saw this coming, like a virus that's unleashed in the world. It starts in China. It goes to Italy. It spreads around the world. And it's so deadly, so catastrophic, so worrisome that we all need to hide out in our homes and lock down, and let's shut down the vast majority of small businesses and destroy them. So I'm, you know, going to the CDC. I didn't really know where else to go. And I'm just looking for data. I'm looking for, okay, how many cases are being reported? And I knew in those early days, even then, there was already reports of suspicious monkey business with respect to positive cases. A lot of false positives, questions like that. I don't remember when it started to come out, but the whole problem, even Fauci acknowledged this, that the labs are running the revolutions for the PCR test up to the 40 range, which I think represents 40,000, but that it's not accurate when you do that. You can find anything you're looking for. And so you had that. You had reports coming in of people dying with COVID, not of COVID. And so that was being counted as a COVID death, even if it wasn't. People going into the hospital for another reason, another health crisis, but then they'd be tested automatically for COVID. And if they were listed as a COVID positive case, it was counted and they died. It was a, you know, death from COVID. So even then, it was like very difficult to even trust the results that were that are coming in. Then you have the deaths. And, of course, another thing that would skew the statistics would be the fact that a lot of people got COVID and never went in and got tested. They didn't want to. they realize that now you're going to get tested and now they're going to try to quarantine you. You can't go to work for 2 weeks. You can't go here and there for however long. And so an awful lot of people, myself included, did not get tested when we suspected we had COVID. And so how many people were out there like that in the population? Who knows? But I'm guessing it was quite a few. Meaning that the number of cases could be higher, although you balance that out with false positives and who knows how it all settles out in the end. But as I was just simply taking at face value the CDC data, cases versus deaths, I was coming up with a death rate of about 1.4%. Those were in the early days. It turned out not to be nearly that high in the end. In the end, the rate ended up being about 0.15%. So 99.9% of people get COVID, survive it. Well, even if it had been 1.4%, that's not exactly the end of the world. And yet we acted like it was. And it wasn't based on facts, wasn't based on actual data. It was based on hysteria and propaganda. Furthermore, no matter how bad the death rate, it doesn't justify mandatory shutdowns of huge portions of the economy. The economy has to go on. If our concern is people are dying, they die when you shut down the businesses and you deprive people of a means to make a living. It had a huge negative impact on third world countries and so forth. People just don't understand the economics and the flow of products and goods and services and how many people in this world are living hand to mouth. And you just suddenly stop all that and you think, what could go wrong? You're not saving lives, you're destroying lives. And for every life you think you might be saving by shutting down the economy and preventing the population from reaching herd immunity, another lie that they said herd immunity is bogus, overnight that shoved down the memory hole. But instead of letting people get infected and the thing go through the population, which is going to do regardless and did do regardless, in spite of everything we tried against it, instead of letting that happen, you shut down the economy and destroy people's livelihoods and businesses and all around the world. How many deaths, I wonder, have occurred simply because of all the lockdowns and destruction of businesses and the flow of goods and services that people depended on? Another lie is that there's essential jobs and non-essential jobs. We might have opinions about what is a non-essential job. Like I would say, being a prostitute is a non-essential job. I would say, being a game show host is a non-essential job. Being a drug dealer is a non-essential job. So yeah, I get it. There's non-essential jobs from a moral standpoint. But the lie is that the government has crystal clear vision on the difference between essential and non-essential and that they got it right. So that if you were deemed non-essential by them, you have to shut down, you have to stay at home. Another lie is that long-term mask wearing is fine. It's not detrimental to your health. Actually, it is. And there's plenty of studies on that to demonstrate that it is not good at all for you to be hindering your airflow, hindering your breathing, hindering your oxygen intake, and breathing your CO2 for hours on end. I won't go into all the details because it's tedious on that and it's boring, but it's out there. It's been out there. This is not controversial, actually, but suddenly we're told that we all need to be wearing masks and children as well who are really unlikely to die from COVID, but they're supposed to be wearing masks all day long. Awful. Another lie, remdesivir is a good drug to be taking. No, that's not true. Remdesivir increases the risk of kidney failure 20-fold. It was pulled from the WHO Ebola trials in 2018 because 53% of the people who took it died. Yet that was the drug of choice, practically the only thing that hospitals were using in the early days. Go home, wait till you're worse, come back, and then we'll put you on remdesivir, which, by the way, Fauci owns a good portion of stock in Gilead, the company Gilead, which puts out remdesivir. We heard the lie that it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That's what Joe Biden said, and he wasn't the only one who said it. But, of course, think about this, folks. From 2020 to the end of 2020, so the vaccine came out in late 2020, December. And at that point, they started with, like, frontline workers, medical people. Then they went to old people, and they had this, you know, tier of this order of who would get it first and who would get it next, such that by the time you get to May 2021, you've got a huge percentage of the population that is vaccinated by that point. But, okay, from February 2020, which is probably the first that most anybody heard of this, it was out there and people were talking about it, but it wasn't really gaining a lot of traction in January of 2020. It started in February and it really picked up steam in March. Of course, all the people who are hospitalized with COVID and truly COVID, and are dying because of it, of course, they're unvaccinated. Of course, and those numbers, it's going to take a while for the vaccinated to catch up with them, because of the rollout that took until May 2021. So it isn't until late May 2021 that you can even make a fair comparison between vaccinated and unvaccinated. And even then, the unvaccinated have had a long head start on getting COVID and going to the hospital and however many dying. Well, it's going to take a while to catch up with that. So it's a completely irrelevant comparison until enough people are vaccinated to compare the two outcomes. Experimental shots are safe for pregnant women. What? I mean, you can't even pick up a bottle of medicine without warnings about pregnant women not taking this or that. They hardly give anything to pregnant women. You're not even supposed to drink wine. And yet, experimental shots that had 2 months of safety or 2 months of trials, that are rushed and sped through, and they didn't even test it on pregnant women in their brief trials. Suddenly we can put that in the arms of pregnant women, and that's fine. You shouldn't be worried about that. You shouldn't be concerned. Don't raise objections. Don't act like this goes against longstanding principles of medicine and safety. That's in the memory hole. That doesn't exist anymore. Next, the COVID vaccine is a vaccine. No, it's not a vaccine. It doesn't fit the typical definition of a vaccine. It's genetic therapy. There have been people who scoff at that and who laugh at that. I laugh all you want. It's genetic therapy. Dr. Robert Malone, who helped invent mRNA technology, confirms that the shots are indeed genetic therapy. Another lie, the shot will stay in your arm. That's what they said. It'll stay in your arm. No, that's a lie, too. That came out through a FOIA request. You know, FOIA is one of the few things that actually still works in government. It's slow, but eventually it works. Judges, so far at least, have somehow remained impervious to what must be pressure not to give a favorable judgment to those demanding Freedom of Information Act requests. The government always tries to slow walk these things and drag their feet and take as long as they can to get it out. But eventually, when it comes to somebody going to jail for not releasing it, they start releasing it. So that came out from Japan submitting a FOIA request, and they discovered, oh, no, that's a lie. It doesn't stay in your arm. The RNA is distributed through lipid nanoparticles. That's the vehicle that goes all over the body. They know lipid nanoparticles travel throughout the body. That's been well known. It was developed to deliver chemotherapy to the brain. They know it crosses the blood-brain barrier. They knew that. They knew it crossed the uterus into the baby, and that it settles in the ovaries and the testes and the organs. That they knew this. So they were lying. The vaccines are safe and effective. No, they're actually not. Once they started rolling out and the number of vaccinated surpassed the unvaccinated, they likewise surpassed the vaccinated in infections, severe illness, and death throughout the world. And if people had simply been treated early and allowed to use ivermectin and a Pulitzer Prize-winning drug, not horse paste, folks, Pulitzer Prize-winning drug used all over the world, wonderful safety profile, has helped so many people in poor nations in many different ways, and suddenly it's treated like it's just something you get from your local vet. Yeah, vets use it too to treat issues in animals. That doesn't make it some ridiculous medicine that COVID deniers and Trump supporters and other idiots like that, you know, believe in. But had they allowed people and hospitals and not fired physicians for using it, and had pharmacies cooperated in getting it out instead of blocking it, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that's been around 60 years and has this marvelous track record and safety profile, suddenly those are eye rollers and, you know, ridiculous medications that are not safe and shouldn't be trusted and shouldn't be used against COVID, because we have one solution. That's the vaccine, and everybody's got to get that. So the people 65 and over are 5 times more likely to die of the vaccine than of COVID. Most of the vaccine caused deaths, by the way, are within 2 weeks of either dose of the primary series. And yet they consider you unvaccinated during that period. So if you take the vaccine and you get one shot and then you die, and many have, even if you take the second shot, you're not considered vaccinated. That's the death of an unvaccinated person. Then if you take the second shot, a certain number of weeks after to go by before you're then considered vaccinated, until they say, well, the efficacy of the vaccines is waning here within 3 months, and I have to have a booster, and then that wanes even quicker until you have to have another booster. So there's this constant moving target of what even the definition of being vaccinated is. But all of that allowed them to lie and continue to claim that the unvaccinated people are the ones that were dying mostly. And going back to an earlier point, you know, if you're not treating people early and they're unvaccinated and they come back and they're having trouble breathing, and then you put them on remdesivir and then you put them on a ventilator, and that was almost a certain death sentence. And yet those are claimed as COVID deaths of the unvaccinated. Well, if you hadn't done those protocols, then maybe not so many would have died who were unvaccinated. So is it really that they're unvaccinated and that's why they're dying, or is it because you're killing them with your protocols? What came out of the Pfizer clinical data, trial data, through a FOIA request again, and it was forced by a judge, even though Pfizer tried to drag their feet and roll it out slowly, that it would take 75 years to release the data. I wonder why they wanted to take so long. The government even stepped in and took Pfizer's side in the matter, and didn't matter. The judge wasn't buying it, so they had to release it. So been going through all of the data on that, and it is downright disturbing. I'll perhaps read that. I don't have it here right in front of me, but some of the statistics on what was the shocking number of adverse events that were showing up in those clinical trials of Pfizer. Folks, at the end of December 2021, so the vaccine was rolled out, has been rolled out for a year. Life insurance actuaries came out alarmed by the number of deaths. And this, what didn't happen in 2020, folks, this happened in 2021 after the vaccine. So they weren't alarmed in 2020 by the number of deaths. They were alarmed in 2021 because death rates were up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic. And that's unheard of. They basically said that that's like a once in a 200 year flood or something that would kill thousands upon thousands of people and be just such a rare occasion. 10% is jaw-dropping. This was 40%. That was confirmed by the Society of Actuaries, and notes specifically the 25 to 65 age cohort. That's the working class. Several months later, after that December 2021 report of One America CEO Scott Davidson, Lincoln National reported that its payouts in 2021 were $1.4 billion versus $548 million in 2020. That was a 164% rise. And that year's crucial because, of course, what the life insurance companies do is they simply raise their rates. So that particular alteration in the data, that particular uptick is not going to be noticed again so much going forward because their losses are not going to be as great because they raise their rates to account for it. But the vaccines that rolled out in 2021 were clearly not reducing death. There's no other conclusion you can draw. You can argue, if you wish, that the vaccines were not causing that 40% increase in death. I think you're blind if you argue that, and it's wishful thinking. But, okay, at a minimum, you have to say, well, it certainly wasn't helping. It certainly didn't reduce death. And by the way, those deaths that they reported are not COVID-related. There's some in there, but vast majority of them not COVID-related. Death was increasing way beyond what it had in 2020 when there were no vaccines and there was only COVID and the magically disappearing flu. Recently, a new report came out from Finance Technologies. They estimate that 26.6 million people have been injured by the vaccine. 1.36 million have been disabled, meaning they can't work at all. And upwards of 300,000 have died, and that's in 2022 alone. This was just 2022 data. So 300,000 deaths from the vaccine, 1.36 million disabled, and 26.6 million injured. Edward Dowd, who spearheaded that study, said his team took the most conservative estimate that they could. So it's probably worse. They were playing it safe. And they got their information on disabilities and injuries from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's where they got their data. And the death figures come from official government data on death rates comparing 2019 with 2022. So there's an 84% increase in death in 2021, the year the shot was rolled out, in people aged 25 to 44. And that's largely the healthiest age group. That generally has lower deaths from COVID. You really did not have high percentages of people in that age group dying from COVID in 2020. The vast majority of people who died from COVID were over 70 and had 3 to 4 comorbidities. It's not the 18 to 64, 65-year-old age cohort. Okay, so there's some of the many, many lies that we were told, and these lies were profound and pervasive and staggering in the reach with which people were duped and deceived by them. Churches are apparently not immune. Most churches, it would appear, shut down during COVID. Our church did not. I don't say that to pat myself on the back. I'm just clearing the air, and if I had not shut down, I would feel the need to confess that to you here and to say, look, we bought into it too. But I didn't, and so I feel like I have to point that out. We didn't buy in. I didn't know everything I know now. A lot of this research had to be developed over months as things became known and available and unearthed and exposed. But what I did know in the beginning is that churches should not be shutting down. And yet most did. Lots of churches have had real trials with this. Some people left during COVID and went to Zoom and never came back. Some came back after the government said that they could. Those who were not afraid and not buying the lies, many of them left their closed churches and went to churches that didn't close. There was a great sorting out that went on. And it's not all bad, actually. But many pastors found themselves in an awkward and difficult situation. I did myself as well, trying to walk a tightrope between two very different groups of church members who had very different ideas on what was going on and what was true and what was false and what was the right thing to do versus the wrong thing to do. And it became difficult to navigate that. And so any pastor that might speak out and speak his mind against the COVID policies and the nonsense and the lies and how we should reject all that was risking offending however many people in his congregation and losing them. And I'm not saying we should base our decisions on what to say and not say on that, but there's also this aspect of, well, this deception was powerful. So it's kind of understandable why people were swept up in it. I mean, we can't recognize the power of the deception and then turn around and act like it's powerless, that it has no effect on us, that we're just impervious to these things. And so we look at our congregations and there's various people and some are weak and maybe susceptible to these things. And we try not to rush to judgment and be patient with people and hopefully they come around and come to the truth on this and recognize the error of shutting down churches and staying away from church. But not everybody comes to that. Some people did never come to that. So. But lies that Christians believed and made it possible to shut down churches, what falsehoods did we believe? Number one, COVID was so deadly that it required brand new, never before enacted responses to save the planet, shut down, stay at home, shelter in place, social distance, wear masks, and accept rushed experimental shots. We believe that it was so deadly that we had to enter a brand new world where nothing we'd known before was true anymore, and truth was just whatever was coming out of Dr. Fauci's mouth every night. And, you know, my point is not to pick on him, but let's face it, he was the face of the government propaganda. He was the talking head. He was the one that was quoted. His ideas and policies would, you know, be worked out through the CDC. So it's not unfair, actually, to quote him. Secondly, lie that Christians believe, the government is trustworthy. The CDC is trustworthy. The FDA is trustworthy. Health and Human Services are trustworthy. They're there for our good. They tell us the truth. And they would only suggest all these strange new measures if they knew it was really necessary. That's a lie, folks. Third lie. We have a First Amendment in our country, and we don't have persecution. And we don't have a country wherein we have to worry about the government prohibiting us from the free exercise of our religion. That happens in other countries, not ours. Therefore, when the government tells us to stop meeting for church all of a sudden, it could only be innocent and could only be benevolently intended. That's a lie, folks. We are going to have to reckon with the fact that our government is not for us anymore. I don't know when it exactly ceased being for us, but it's not for us. And it's not anymore the case that we would just have in our prayer meetings times where we pray for the persecuted church who suffer under the oppressive attacks and behavior of their government. And we feel for them, we feel badly for them, and we're thankful we don't have to deal with that. Those days are over. We're with them now. We have a government that lies to us and is not for us. Fourthly, another lie we believed, because of Romans 13, we must always obey the government. Romans 13 is absolute. There's no limitations or exceptions for the Romans 13 command that we'd be subject to the governing authorities. It's absolute. Now, in one sense, we didn't believe that. We thought that, well, if the government tells us to stop preaching the gospel, we say with Peter, shall we obey God or men? So we kind of had that in the back of our mind that, yeah, it's not absolute. But it's like we were so myopic and narrow in that conception of things, of how the government might attack us or how the government might come against us, that that's the only basis we could ever think of as to why we would disobey the government authorities. Well, when they tell us to stop preaching the gospel, that's when we'll disobey. Well, they told us to quit meeting for church. And why did we obey them? I guess we thought church is optional. Which brings me to the next lie we believed. We believe that there is no moral obligation to gather together for worship on the Lord's Day. Now, I'm a Reformed Baptist. I'm a 1689 confession guy. It's not that I think the 1689 confession is infallible, but I'm just telling you where I'm at doctrinally. But I believe that the Lord's Day is a Christian Sabbath. I believe the fourth commandment is still valid today. I believe that remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy is a part of God's moral law that is perpetual, that it has no expiration date, that it is the law of God that governs what is right and wrong for the human race until this world is destroyed and burned up and then a new one is created. And because of that, I don't have a problem with the fourth commandment. I'm not allergic to the word Sabbath. I think we are duty bound to gather in person for church. If you don't like the fourth commandment, okay, try Hebrews 10:25. Not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. If you're a dispensationalist or you're a New Covenant theology, what about Hebrews 10:25? We're duty bound to come to church. It's not an option. It's not something we can decide, no, I don't need to do that. Zoom is fine for true shut-ins, people that really can't be there. It's great for them. Before that, they might have to listen on the radio, or they might catch the sermon later on sermon audio. But now, there are things where they can actually see it live. But it's still not ideal, and it's still less than what we would want. It should be less than what those shut-ins themselves want. It's less than what we should want for them, and we shouldn't draw inferences from what shut-ins have to accept and live with and say that, oh, well, since it's okay for them, it's okay for everybody. Now, we put our sermons on Zoom during that time. One could argue that if I was consistent in my views here, I wouldn't have even made that available. But it was available for shut-ins, for one thing, with people that were actually shut-ins. I also made it available because I'm trying to be patient and let people work through these things and hopefully come to the truth of things eventually. But make no mistake about it, Zoom is not a substitute for in-person worship, and it should never have been considered one. And finally, another lie that Christians believe is we should, above all, always play it safe. This is basically safetyism crept into the church. Safetyism is a philosophy, an extreme social distancing measure that has become a culture or belief system in the United States, in which safety, including emotional safety, is seen as a sacred value, and people become unwilling to make trade-offs demanded by other practical and moral concerns. And you see that safetyism crept in the church. We're not willing to make any trade-offs. Safetyism is an absolute. It's like the greatest commandment. It's non-negotiable. Other things must be sacrificed on the altar of it for us to be safe. Well, that's enough for this particular lesson and addressing the issue of deception and lies. The world just went through a profound period of lies and propaganda, and I'm not sure how many people have awakened at this point and have come to a conclusion that, wow, we were just duped. This whole thing was a lie. We surrendered our rights and we rolled over and gave them up, essentially, made no objection over this for the sake of a virus that we couldn't stop anyway. And I don't know how many people have come to see the light on this or not, but one thing I do know, that if we don't come to the light, if we don't have any ability to recognize the truth here, if we're not willing to dive into the facts and recognize what was true versus what was false and make adjustments and repent and change our ways, then it's going to happen again. And it's not going to turn out any better the next time than it did this last time.